Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come, Joel. Seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
In our 670 The Score studios, Jordan Malley.
Shout out to Jordan Malley.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No.
No.
I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, you're going to make it happen.
And Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls, 5 days a week.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Matt Peck, also host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls _Peck. You can follow my co-host Jordan Malley at Jordan C. Malley. And you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Shoot us an email, LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. And of course, that text to voicemail line is always there for you, our fellow Bulls fans, at 331-979-1369. Again, that number, 331-979-1369. Save it in your phone. Shoot us a text. Shoot us a voicemail. Anything Bulls or NBA related or anything on your mind, we're here for you. We do mailbag every week. Amazing episode for y'all today. I had the pleasure of chatting with one of Jordan's colleagues over at 670 The Score. You know him as the voice of Bulls games on the radio. Chuck Swirsky, the one and only. Such a pleasure and such an honor to talk to Chuck. I actually met him for the first time when me and my fellow outsiders were lucky enough to get a couple of invites to the Bulls charity gala last fall. And I fanboyed out real hard on Chuck. I mean, I love him. I love the work he does. I tremendously respect his career. And as I told him in our conversation that, you know, I associate his voice with my favorite team and some of the great moments of that team and the connection of voice to moments and how sports fans remember moments. At least me personally, I remember moments because of what I hear as it's being played out and the call of the broadcasters that are calling the game. And Chuck is a legend, a true living legend in that regard. And he's also just one of the nicest, most positive people to talk to and to even just absorb his presence on Twitter. Just such positivity and not in the ludicrous, insane way like my pal C. Red Fred, but just a truly positive person, so kind and was so generous with his time. So we covered a lot of ground. We talked about The Last Dance. We talked about the big debate on social media from those first two episodes, the Scottie Pippen contract ordeal. We talked about Jerry Krause being vilified and whether or not that's fair. We talked about the current Bulls and what he thinks about Coby White and his rookie year and the makeup of Coby's character. We also talked a little bit of D. Rose and some of Chuck's favorite D. Rose moments and talked about his broadcasting career and some of his favorite calls as a fan from back in the Dynasty days. A truly, truly wonderful and enjoyable conversation. It's an honor for me to get to talk Bulls basketball with Chuck Swirsky. The dude is just so great. And I hope you enjoy the conversation. So here it is, the Locked On Bulls debut of Chuck Swirsky. Right now, we are very pleased to welcome in to the Locked On Bulls podcast, making his Locked On Bulls debut, Chuck Swirsky, the Bulls radio play-by-play guy and the guy who has all of those fantastic interviews with countless members of Bulls teams past and present for Bulls TV. Chuck, welcome to the podcast, man. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, first off, how's everybody doing? How are you? How is the family? Everybody staying safe and staying sane in these crazy times?
Well, that's the key. I mean, you got to stay in, and with the exception of the essentials, grocery shopping, I come right back here and have done a lot of reading. And have watched a lot of tape on the 2020 draft class. And for the most part, I'm just, social distancing.
Well, that's the right answer these days. Obviously, the draft hopefully will still go as planned, and the Bulls are looking like the a team that will be having a high lottery pick again. And between that and this amazing content of the old days right now, it's not a bad time to be sheltered inside with a Bulls documentary on ESPN and the Bulls Rewind re-airs that NBC Sports Chicago is doing. You know, I just watched my buddy Kendall Gill trying to slow down MJ and Pip and the guys in a doubleheader last night. It was a lot of fun. Let's start with the documentary. Your first impression or your favorite part of those first two episodes that we saw Sunday night?
Well, it's good to see Michael opening up because, as we know, and those of us who covered Michael, and I was in Chicago from 79 to 94, so I was here before Jordan, and then when Jordan was drafted, and then the first three-peat before I left to go to call the University of Michigan. But, you know, this is very polarizing with Jordan and Pippen and Krause and whatnot. And the thing I really took away from this is, I wish Jerry Krause was living, so at least he would have an opportunity, whether or not he would take it up, but whether or not he would have an opportunity to, you know, explain himself and as he reflects on 20 plus years after the fact, because I really think he's getting vilified. And, you know, again, you know, Jerry had to make decisions, whether they're right, wrong, and different remains to be seen. But, you know, the documentary at the start in the first two episodes really puts him in a bad light. And I feel very, very badly for his family. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I think that the fan base at large is always quick to point a finger of blame at Jerry Krause for the dismantling of the dynasty. I mean, you saw it even in some of the footage in the first episode where it's the ring ceremony night, the first home game of the 97-98 season, and Jerry Krause is announced to come get his ring at center court, and it's either crickets or boos. And then, of course, Phil Jackson follows and the United Center erupts in applause. I think just because fans always attach themselves to the team first and specifically to Michael first, and even back then, social media wasn't as crazy as it is now, but we still read the headlines and we read the stories in the newspapers, and the fans took MJ's side. But I don't think anybody was the villain. And I'm with you. I really wish that Jerry Krause was still around to get his thoughts currently and to defend himself because I think this is not a story about a superhero and a villain. It's a story about a lot of people and a lot of egos and one great basketball team.
Well, I mean, it was one great basketball team. None of this would have happened without Michael Jordan. So let's be very clear about this. I mean, Michael Jordan is the greatest team sports player in the history of the planet, okay? And I say that with reverence and respect for all the NBA players that came before him or will come after him or in the present form or in the NHL. If someone said, well, it's Gretzky, it's Bobby Orr, you know, it's Gordie Howe, all these great stars of the NHL and the NFL, obviously, we had a superstar already in Chicago when Jordan was drafted. His name was Walter Payton. And so you can take the greatest football players of all time, the greatest baseball players of all time, whether that was Babe Ruth, Henry Aaron, Willie Mays, whomever you want to pick. But Michael Jordan is at the top of the list. And so without Jordan, they don't win six titles. You know that. I know that. Everyone knows that. And so what we're seeing, obviously, is the tenacity of a Jordan, his intensity to win, and the way he handled dealing with his own ego and the time in drafting by the Bulls, how he was surrounded by a lot of journeyman players and how Jordan lifted other players up, but he had to have help. And that help came in the draft. That help came through trades. And those things don't happen without Jerry Krause. And then you had two coaches, Doug Collins, a terrific head coach, and Phil Jackson, who then took it to the next level. And so I think a lot of people need to be praised about this. But again, nothing happens without Michael Jordan, period.
Yeah, and you saw some of that behind-the-scenes footage of MJ and Krause and their interactions and the teasing. And I think it's interesting. I was just listening to Bill Wennington, your partner on Bulls Radio, do an interview the other day about how pretty much everybody on the team just let Michael do whatever Michael wanted to do because he was Michael. Like, he's MJ. He can get away with anything. And so while some of the teasing of Jerry was really uncomfortable, it was just like, well, you know, none of us have the power to stop this. And then I think it's something that a lot of people were fascinated with in the first two episodes of the documentary is not just MJ and Jerry Krause's relationship, but how sour his relationship got with Scottie Pippen with his contract controversy and all that, and how at certain times Scottie's berating of Jerry Krause got even more aggressive than MJ's. What did you make of the whole Scottie Pippen part of the first two episodes? Because, you know, most Bulls fans who are around remember Scottie being unhappy, not just requesting a trade in this final season, sitting out to delay his foot surgery so that he'd miss a bunch of games, but requesting trade the year before that. Everybody remembers he was right. Unhappy. What was your take on the Scottie contract dispute?
Well, let's back it up a little bit. So for transparency's sake, I was not here when this played itself out at the end of Pippen's run with the Bulls. As I mentioned, I left in 94. I did 4 years at the University of Michigan and then went to the Raptors in 98. So I was not here when this thing came to an apex acrimony. I was here when Pippen signed a long-term deal. And again, this deal was presented and you have options. It's almost like when you go to an optometrist, you know, and they do the eye test and they put a, you know, they say close one eye and then, you know, is it A or B, number one or number two? You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
Where
yeah,
it's the clarity of the letters.
Okay. Yeah.
So a player has options. You want to go short term, you want to go long term. And there are strengths and weaknesses to both options. Okay. Does a player want short term, bet on himself? And if he says, okay, you know what, I can make a lot of money in the fourth year of this deal if I sign a three-year deal, or am I going to take a 6-7 year deal, have guaranteed money, which I know if I have a knee, a back, a shoulder, whatever the case may be, I've got that money. And that's up to the player. And so as you heard Jerry Reinsdorf saying, listen, you sure you want to do this? I'm not sure. But again, option A, option B. So when you sign that deal, man, it's like anything else. If I sign a contract, I have never attempted to renegotiate a contract. Once I sign that contract, that is a contract. And you have my word, you have my signature. And whether or not the moment you sign that deal, within 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, that contract, you're looking at it after 2 years and you're saying, wait a minute. You know, look at what that guy's making. Look at that contract this guy just got extended for. Well, guess what? I get it. You're upset. You're frustrated. Are you underpaid? Absolutely. But guess what? You signed a contract. And I think the world is Scottie Pippen. Scottie Pippen is one of the greatest players in the history of this sport. But he was frustrated, and I get that. But at the end of the day, you sign a contract, you sign a contract. I don't know if you understand where I'm coming from, but this is just me.
Yeah, and I think a lot of fans who watched that that documentary's element of the Scottie contract dispute play out came down somewhere along the lines of, well, look, everyone shared some blame in this. Scottie signed the contract. As you said, Chuck, you know, he was presented with options. He took long-term security. And we all also, you know, if you didn't already know, got some more of his family backstory, and maybe that certainly playing a big factor into taking that long-term security on that 7-year contract. And so you can understand where Scottie was coming from at the time. You also understand that halfway through that contract, he became grossly underpaid. And you can understand Jerry Reinsdorf saying, hey, man, I don't want to renegotiate contracts. So I would advise you to not sign this. But if you do sign it, that's it. Don't come back to me and ask me to renegotiate. I understand that perspective as an owner who doesn't want a long line of players coming in asking for more money if they see, hey, one of their teammates asked for more and got more. I think, I'm curious to get your thought on this. for a player as great as Scotty, as you just said, could you make an exception and say, you know what, for everything you've done for this organization, for everything that you have gotten us as far as championships, banners, fans in the building, all of the money this organization has made because of your talent and what you've done for us, let's make this right. Because they did kind of do that with his sign and trade with the Rockets. It just took a long time to finally get the money to Scotty that he deserved.
Well, I mean, ultimately, that's between ownership, management, and the player. And, you know, if teams do that, they do that. If they don't, they don't. All I know is that, you know, to me, and again, I'm old school. That this is the way I was raised, is that my word means everything. And when you sign a contract, you sign a contract. And are exceptions made? Probably. You know, in this case, that's between the ball club and Scottie Pippen. But again, this was given to Scottie ahead of time, and I completely understand why he signed that deal. It meant security. Here's a young man, not really, you know, learning the trade in the NBA. He's learning on the fly. He's presented with a really nice contract. Long-term security, and he signed it. And so once you sign it, you sign it. And ultimately, as you mentioned, Matt, he got paid in that sign and trade with Houston. If you think about it, okay, you know, where the Bulls were at and they were bringing up the ball club, if you're the Bulls, are you going to pay Scottie Pippen $80 million knowing you're in a rebuild, you know?
Right.
I mean, I would think you probably say to yourself, okay, like we can put Pippen maybe as the point person, but really by the time we get better and turn the corner in the rebuild, then what do we have here? I mean, you know, you gotta look at the big picture here as far as had they signed Pippen to an extension for the 98-99 year and what that would have meant down the road. You know, I think it would probably worked out for both teams, obviously, for Houston. And the Bulls were at that time able to say, all right, let's do the blank canvas and let's see where this is going. I mean, hindsight is 20/20, as we know. But, you know, Scottie did get his money. And he had, you know, I mean, to me, post Bulls, it was really Pippen with Portland. I think that Portland team was really, really good. And I thought they were good enough to make an NBA Finals appearance.
Yeah, I mean, I think most fans would agree with that, too. We're talking with Chuck Swirsky, Bulls radio play-by-play guy here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow Chuck on Twitter if you aren't already at CTS Bulls. Chuck, before we move into the present, one more question for you about this Last Dance documentary and looking back on the fondness of the dynasty. As a broadcaster yourself, I'm curious if you have a favorite call of a different broadcaster that is tied to the dynasty years. We got kind of like a quick montage of the Bulls' first five titles leading into the story of this sixth and final one. You know, just a couple of iconic ones that come to mind. Marv Albert's call of MJ going, you know, the switch of the hands, a spectacular move against the Lakers in 91. Neil Funk's call of his shot against Byron Russell in 98. Even Costas on that call doing the national call. There's so many great, epic moments of broadcasting attached to this dynasty. As a broadcaster yourself, any particular favorite?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously from a spectator standpoint, because I was a fan in the last three, had not, you know, been in Chicago. But, you know, the Paxson three against Phoenix was awesome. And, I mean, you know, right there on the call, Marv is there and whatnot. But, you know, people fail to realize this, and that the 91 finals, Jim Durham was the announcer, and he called the radio play-by-play for the Bulls, and then he left, obviously, and Neil came in for number 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. But, you know, you look at the great broadcasters with the Bulls, even in it's starting with this franchise. I mean, Jack Brickhouse was the voice of the Bulls. Milo Hamilton, Bob Costas were the TV voices of the Bulls. Wayne Larrabee called Bulls games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you had Jim Durham, who to me is without any question in the top three of all-time great basketball announcers of this generation. I mean, he was fantastic. Neil Funk one day will be in the Hall of Fame, and he should be in the Hall of Fame. Actually, I'm shocked he's not in the Hall of Fame, and he should be. So, I mean, there are a lot of great broadcasters that had, you know, those iconic moments, as you mentioned, during this championship run.
We'll get back to our conversation with Chuck Swirsky in just a second. But first, a word from our friends at Postmates. From an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beers while you're watching The Last Dance, sometimes you just need what you need delivered fast. And that's where Postmates comes in. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I love food. That's why I love using Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to my door. Chicago is doing a great job. A lot of restaurants are still doing takeout and delivery. And Postmates is right there working with them to make sure us Chicagoans stay fed during these tough times. But Postmates doesn't just deliver burgers and sushi. They actually make life easier with grocery delivery and whatever I can think of delivery too. Convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it. So no more trips to the store, no more late night fast food runs. I don't even have to worry about where I'm getting my lunch anymore. Just download Postmates on iOS or Android. Find your favorites and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDONNBA. That's code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. And now, back to our conversation with Bulls Radio's Chuck Swirsky. What's it like working with Wennington right now these days? I mean, the guy just seems like such a fun goofball to work with.
Well, you know what? He is a terrific person, first and foremost. I mean, you know, Bill is pretty deep when you, you know, because we only hear Bill on the radio and whatnot talking Bulls ball when he comes on with you, when he comes on different segments of the radio and television audience in Chicago, in this case, the national forum with The Last Dance. But Bill is very, very good at having conversations just other than basketball. You know, he has a great pulse on music. He's really into music and he knows his music and he's very eclectic. And same thing with politics or social issues. Very, very adept at making sure that, you know, one feels comfortable getting into a conversation because Bill is very deep in those areas. On the air, you can't ask for a better partner. I mean, he's loyal, he's supportive, he has a great sense of humor. He's just awesome, period.
And, you know, I look back and rewatching some of these games from the old days, I do miss his mullet. I do, like a lot. But, you know, he's the facial hair, I think, makes up for it these days.
Yeah, well, you know what? Actually, you know, the first time I saw Bill play, I was doing play-by-play for DePaul, and DePaul would have a series with St. John's, and it was a one-game series each year. Either, you know, St. John's would come into the then Rosemont Horizon, or DePaul would play St. John's at the Garden in New York. And so that's really the first time that I saw Bill. And then, of course, I was here just briefly before I left for Michigan when Bill became a Bull. And then if you want to fast forward, so I get to know Bill a little bit more when, you know, the Raptors are playing Bulls. I call games when Bill at the late stages of his career, when I was the Raptor announcer. And then the Canadian Basketball Hall of Fame asked me to MC the event. And it was an event that Bill was being inducted into the Canadian Basketball Hall of Fame. So it goes full circle.
Chuck, I think maybe the coolest part of your job and something that I really enjoy, and I probably enjoy it just as much as listening to you on the radio, is your one-on-ones interviewing Bulls players. Like right now, your Twitter bio picture is you interviewing Bulls rookie Coby White. I'm curious to get your thoughts on the season he had. Because you know, he just seemed like such a positive kid and such a quality draft pick, as you know, right out of the gate on draft night when you started hearing from him and his excitement about his teammate from UNC getting drafted earlier than he thought. And this is like the first glimpse that Bulls fans are getting at this kid who just seems so positive despite such a challenging upbringing and challenging childhood with the loss of his father. What have you learned talking to Kobe one-on-one, and what did you think about that incredible stretch of games he had before the season got cut short?
Well, the thing that has stayed with me from the moment I first met him, I mean, I had seen him on television. I had never met the man before his press conference. So when I first met him and then got to know him a little bit, because again, this is, you get to know someone gradually. If you come on like a freight train, that's not going to work. And I've done this a long, long time. And so you have to be patient. And you let that organically grow into a professional first acquaintance and then friendship from the standpoint that at least he feels comfortable with you. You never want to, as I mentioned, you never want to push the envelope. So one thing that has been very constant from training camp to this point has been his humility. And I think that best describes Kobe White. He is extremely polite, very respectful, quiet. You know, when I ask him questions, he's thoughtful. And I just think that he is about what, you know, his family has planted the seeds in his soul as far as gratitude, humility, and just a sense of comfort where he's at right now as a player. He really wants to get better. And he will get better. And that stretch he had, you know, of, you know, 30 points here, 30 points there. And I'm looking, and we saw him as a player in that week demonstrate the ability he has. And I'm not saying he's getting 30 every night, because he won't. He may not get 25 every night. But this kid can score. And now he's going to learn other elements of his game. And the beauty of it is that he wants to get better. And he's very young, and he has an incredible upside. This was a great pick. When the draft was taking place and Phoenix and Minnesota made that deal, my heart dropped, because I thought Minnesota was going to say, all right, we're going with Kobe White. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. Not saying that Culver wasn't a bad player,
right?
Because he probably would have been drafted by the Bulls. But I was hoping that Kobe White was going to drop to 7. Unfortunately for the Bulls, he did.
Yeah, I think he provided a much-needed silver lining, a much-needed level of excitement for a fan base that, you know, by that point in the season, you know, we reach February and the Bulls are not where they wanted to be. You know, they set these, perhaps some would say, lofty goals of being a playoff team, but it is the third year of a rebuild. They added nice pieces in free agency, and they added Kobe. And for a couple of different reasons, you know, they start the season losing a lot of games where they have a substantial lead in the fourth quarter or the second half. They're a young team that struggles to close, and then they've also dealt with some injuries. So from all of that, I think getting to watch Kobe in that amazing stretch he had is something the fan base really needed. Thinking about where we are now and the fact that it's not just reminiscing about the old days because of documentaries and Bulls rewinds, but the Bulls have made national headlines over the last couple of weeks as the entire sports world comes to a halt because they've been busy making moves because of the disappointing season they've had in year three of the rebuild. John Paxson brought it upon himself and Michael Reinsdorf to make some changes. So want to get your thoughts on the changing of the front office and the hire of Arturis Karnišovas.
Well, you know, I've never met Arturis. I've heard of him, obviously, because this is really a very small fraternity, Matt. And so you hear people, you get to know different people in different front offices, and you pick things up here and there. And it was very clear in the early outset of this search, once it was announced or leaked or whatever that was happening, that, you know, he was going to be a very solid candidate. And as I mentioned, I don't know him. I've never spoken to him. And that's the truth. But everyone who I know, who know of him or know him, speak so well of him as a person, first and foremost, and secondly, as a basketball man. And so, you know, what he's going to bring this ball club and the people that he's going to surround himself with is going to be outstanding. And I just want to say this since, you know, I'm on your podcast here. So I know a lot's been said and written over the last 2-3 weeks, but I do want to say thank you to Pax and to Gar. And I know, you know, a lot of fans have their opinions, but I can only treat a person the way they've treated me personally and professionally. And I've seen these two men work extremely hard. And, you know, everyone has strengths. Everyone makes mistakes. And that includes me, you, everyone in the world. And I think for Pax to go to Michael Reinsdorf and say, let's talk about this, speaks volumes of the character and the integrity of Pax. And so having said that, we move forward, and I'm excited about the future and about, you know, a kind of fresh and different and new approach. But again, the bottom line is that you got to win. And I think the Bulls will turn the corner. They do have pieces. The cupboard is not bare. And now Arturas is going to be able to look at the landscape of this franchise and add on and do his thing. And I'm very encouraged. I'm very excited.
Well said, Chuck. I know, and I won't pretend that I haven't. I've said some judgmental things about John Paxson and his job and his job performance as the leading executive of this team. 17 years is a long time to run a team in this big of a market with this much power, money, and a strong fan base behind it. I always thought that one conference finals appearance wasn't enough, but to his credit, you know, he said a couple years ago, if there comes a point where I don't believe that I'm the right guy to lead this organization, then I'll come to the Reinsdorfs and say, let's change this. And that's exactly what he did. So I respect him for that. And I think that especially as we watch this documentary and we see glimpses of young Paxson, man, I can't decide what was worse, Wennington's mullet or Paxson's mustache in the 80s. I don't know. What do you think? Which one do you think was worse?
Well, you're asking the wrong person because I'm honestly challenged. And so I don't think you're going to get an answer from me.
Well, that's fair. I hope that the fan base learns to love Paxson again, because personally, I was a kid when, you know, he hit the shot in 93, and I wasn't even around when he had, you know, a big shot that we saw in the documentary that helped the Bulls sneak into the playoffs in 86 that led to MJ's amazing performance of 63 in the Boston Garden. So there is a part of the fan base right now that only knows John Paxson as, you know, the Lex Luthor looking executive who, in their opinion, has failed to get the job done. But I think him being the one to orchestrate this change and bring in, I think, a hire in AK that the fan base is very happy about and very optimistic about, we can go back to appreciating Paxson the way that he should be appreciated now that we can remember what he did for this team. And I think what you said is very important and something fans should always remember. They may be frustrated, and I may have been frustrated at times with his job performance, but you will never meet someone who cares more about the Chicago Bulls organization and wants them to win more than John Paxson does.
Well said, and I agree with you.
So, Chuck, I'm curious. You know, we were just talking about Coby White, and before I let you go, some of these younger fans who might not remember John Paxson as a player, they don't have the dynasty as the strong pull of nostalgia that older fans do. And to them, the Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Tibbs years, that's their nostalgia because that's the best it's been in their lifetime. You got to make some amazing calls and watch some amazing plays by another young, exciting guard that played for this team, Derrick Rose. I'm curious if you have a favorite of all of the amazing things you saw Derrick Rose do in a Bulls jersey. Did you have one that, like, between the moment watching what Derek did and your call of it, is far and away your favorite?
Well, I mean, the game winner over Tristan Thompson in Cleveland against Cleveland at the United Center on the bank shot was unbelievable. But there is so many Derrick Rose moments. You know, I was thinking about the first playoff game. We just had the anniversary of his first playoff game against Boston in 2009. And, I mean, he just went after Rondo on the bounce. It was unbelievable. And to see this young, vibrant player and with a motor and with power and with strength and with jagged, torqued angles, you know, and you look at what he was able to do before that knee and then obviously coming back after his second knee, different knee injury. But, I mean, I you know, for someone to be an MVP, the youngest MVP in the history, I mean, you look at that and you say, wow. And every night there was a wow moment. You know, I had the pleasure of also calling Vince Carter when Carter came in to the NBA in 98. And every game was a wow moment. And for Rose, it was almost the same. Now, they were two different players, obviously, with different skill sets. But one thing was a common thread, and that was they both had the it factor. And you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because, I mean, Vince was, he played above the rim every night, like every night. And it just wasn't one dunk. He was abusing that rim and opposing players off the dribble, going to the rack. And, you know, unfortunately, just like Derek, he started to suffer knee injuries. But to Vince's credit, you know, he changed his nutritional habits, worked on his body, and here he's, you know, 22nd year in the league, tops ever in the NBA, where maybe after 5-6 years, you were starting to think, is he going to even make it to 10 years in the NBA? But one thing that when Vince took the floor, there was a presence. And one thing about Derrick Rose, when he took the floor, there was a presence. And it was a pleasure being around them, both outstanding people, both, you know, give it their best each and every game. And so, you know, I have been truly blessed.
I mean, just some iconic moments. And it's just, it's very cool that that whether it's you or Neil, who you said, you know, is you know, putting a bow on an amazing career, the voices that fans attach to the moments that they watch, whether it's from back in the dynasty days or the Derrick Rose years or even you calling, you know, some spectacular things that Kobe White and Zach LaVine did this season. There, you know, as a kid growing up watching the Jordan years, there, you know, there are certain moments that I attach broadcaster voice and call to the moment, and that's what helps me remember it. And I think it's just so cool to get the perspective from those people like you who are there doing that job. And I think I could speak for the fan base when I say your voice is attached to Bulls basketball. And for that reason, it is such an honor to have your voice on this podcast. Chuck, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. And, you know, stay safe and give my best to everyone in your corner. And, you know, if you get real desperate, just do what people are doing and do random play-by-play on things not at all sports related that you see on the internet. Okay.
Well, I hope the podcast went well. You know what? I'm glad you gave me the opportunity to leave because, you know, I feel badly for Jerry Krause's family. I really do. I mean, you know, I'm sure they, and again, Jerry brought some of it on himself. I get it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, picking up the newspaper today and seeing his picture on the back page of saying Chicago's number one villain. I mean, you know, to me, if I'm a family member, and, you know, it's hard enough to lose anybody in the family, Matt, but to go through this again and, you know, to see, you know, a picture and it says villain. I mean, you know, we're talking basketball here. The big picture, it's basketball. You got people dying here.
Right.
Coronavirus. And, I mean, you put a guy in saying he's Chicago's number one villain. Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't get it. I just don't.
I understand. I feel the same way. Look, obviously there were a lot of reasons the dynasty broke up, but for everyone to just point a finger at Krause is wrong, in my opinion.
And, well, and it really is. Question.
Yeah.
I get the fact that he and Phil, it was very polarizing. you know, and Phil was able to, you know, reel in Pippen and Jordan. It became, you know, players against management, and that's how it rolled out. But let me ask you a question. Let's say you're the GM, and let's say you had Jordan, and Jordan says, I'm attached to the hip of Phil Jackson. Phil's not coming back. Now, whether that's right or wrong, that was Krause, I get it. But if you're Pippen and you're the Bulls and you're saying, okay, well, Jordan is leaving, Rodman is unreliable, and so what do we have really other than Pippen? And Pippen wants a max contract. So are you going to give Pippen, who had knee issues and back issues, are you going to give him $85 million in those days? That was the max. Are you going to give him $85 million at the age of 31, 32 with a totally rebuilt ball club that's not probably going to get in the playoffs for another 3 years, whatever? And by that time, he's 35, 36, making at that point, max was about 16 a year. So, I mean, do you understand the logic and the thought process why they didn't do that?
Yeah, I have always been of the opinion that breaking that dynasty up was the right call. I mean, obviously, there were some tough years that followed that was to be expected. But, I mean, you mentioned the age and the injuries. To me, that was as, you know, if MJ won't play for anyone but Phil, and Phil is definitely gone, you combine that with the age, the injuries, and what it would cost to keep everybody around. I always thought, you know what? And what a perfect ending. Because, you know, what if because of all of the age and the injuries, they don't win in 99? Like, maybe it's 6-1 instead of 6-0. Maybe the perfectly wrapped up dynasty doesn't have a perfect ending if you tried to force it. I look back and I say, I'm so glad that it ended the way it did.
So anyway, I will let you go. Anytime you need me, Matt, you got my number. Call me.
Thank you so much, Chuck. I really appreciate the time, man. And stay safe and be well during these crazy times.
I will. Thank you. Same to you.
All right. Bye-bye. Take care, Chuck. Thank you again to Chuck Swirsky. Just such a pleasure to talk Bulls hoops and broadcasting with that guy. such a positive, bright spirit, and a legend. Such a talent. That was a big one for us. Jordan and I have been trying to get Chuck on for a while, and fortunately, you know, silver lining to everybody being quarantined and staying around, plenty of time. Everyone's got plenty of time on their hands, so we were able to get Chuck on, and we truly appreciate his time. As I said before, if you aren't already, for whatever reason, follow Chuck on Twitter at CTSBulls. I hope all y'all are maintaining your sanity while staying safe, staying inside, staying home, as we all work to get through these crazy times together. Jordan and I will be here for you to provide content, because as I said with Chuck, the world and the sports world may be on pause right now, but between documentaries, Bulls rewinds, and front office changes, Bulls are making headlines right now. Bless their souls. So we're here for you. And so is that text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. We'll get to some texts and voicemails and emails as we do mailbag sometime later this week. Until then, for my partner, Jordan Malley, for our wonderful, esteemed guest, Chuck Swirsky, Matt Peck saying thanks so much for listening. As always, Bulls Nation, we love you. We appreciate you. See you red. Be good. Peace out.
It's Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 score scope. Yep, where is he? And Jeff Banger, he's right over there, Bill. And Rich Wyatt is spinning the dials here at the United Center.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com